When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
This is the GM Shuffle.
If you take over any organization, you buy a franchise, your number one goal is to get your quarterback. So you're going to be relentless in that pursuit.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to a special NFL Draft edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. Michael, it is fantastic to have you in studio. We've been doing these things remote, and now we get to see you in 3D.
It's good to be here, Femi. It's good to be out in Vegas. Good to be at the Circa. What a great spot. I mean, my Lord, this is what everybody wants their living room to look like, right?
It's got all the bells and whistles.
It's unbelievable. Mike Palm, Derek Stevens, incredible job. If you get a chance, you ought to come down here. This is truly a sports fan's paradise. It really is.
It really is. We were joking, like, hey, this might be heaven, or at least that's what we'd imagine
it's
heaven would look like.
It's one step closer to it, I can tell you that. I mean, if Rod Serling was here, he'd write a hell of an episode of it, you know?
It's going to be a fun episode. We have a lot of questions to get to with the NFL draft coming up here. But as always, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And tweet at us as well, at MLombardiNFL is where you can find Michael. At Femi Abebefe is where you can find me, producer Stephen Bond, on the ones and twos. As always for us here, Michael, but let's get into this thing, because at the top of the draft board, the Jacksonville Jaguars sitting here, and right now, leading up to it as of Wednesday evening, we do not know who the Jacksonville Jaguars will be selecting. But before we get into that, I want you to kind of peel back the layers. What is going on in that Jacksonville Jaguars front office right now? What is the night before a draft looking like when you have a coveted pick, like pick number one?
Oh, I think they know who they're picking. I think they're just posturing, and they know exactly what they're going to do. And I think ultimately what they're trying to figure out is what they're going to do in the second round. Like, where are they going, what they're trying to do. You know, when you have two picks in the draft, you really become a pool player. So you know you're going to make one shot. It's where you want to put the ball to be the second shot. And so I think that's what Jacksonville, where are we going to get? They know they've got to pick this guy, you know, whether they're debating whether it's going to be, you know, whether it's Hutchinson, whether it's, you know, Neal, Iwane, or, you know, whatever one of those guys they want to go with. I mean, they are. I think it's going to be Walker. Mm-hmm. Is what all indications are. If you know Balky and you know what he wants to do, but of course you've got the Kamm family. We're not sure there, but so I think that's really ultimately what's going on is they know what they're going to do, and they just kind of make sure they want to see what's going to get there at the bottom of the first and see what they need to do.
Because last time we talked on Monday, and it was okay, there was the move in the betting market, and there was reports coming out that it was going to be Walker, that Trent Baalke was winning the arguments. So I guess over the next few days, has it just been Baalke getting everybody on board, and like today is when they make the decision, or kind of how has this kind of come to be to where it's probably going to lean toward Georgia defensive end Trayvon
Walker? Well, Shaq Khan said that they were going to get together today, so and he's been involved. I think, look, the one thing I have learned through talking to a bunch of different people is these owners, I think, are more involved. Based on the way these contracts have gone lately, that mm-hmm. they're really, and especially with the guarantee to Deshaun Watson, don't think that doesn't impact everybody.
Sounds like everyone's pissed.
Everybody is pissed because they've never had to do this before. They've always been had a way to get around it. You know, it was the greatest thing you could say. An agent said, well, we want it fully guaranteed. Well, we can't fully guarantee it. We're not going to fund the money. It was a great out. You had a great, well, skill it. Or injury it, but we won't do both. You could do skill or injury. You couldn't do both. If we did injury, you definitely didn't have to fund it. So, you know, that made it a lot easier. But now that they don't have that out, I think the owners are taking a definite interest in this.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how the Khan family has been more involved in this. It was reporting that Khan's like Aiden Hutchinson, but maybe it's leaning towards Trayvon Walker. I want to ask you, because we saw the news earlier today that Cam Robinson agreed to his extension. Right. 3 years, $54 million is what was reported there. How does that factor into the discussions of number one? Because Akeem Okwunu, the NC State offensive tackle, was thought of as somebody that Doug Peterson liked. Now that they got Robinson signed for at least the next 2 to 3 years, does that also alter the decision-making and leading this thing towards Trayvon Walker?
Well, you could take Okwunu and put him over at right tackle if you wanted to, right? You could take him and put him at – most people in this draft think he's going to end up playing guard. Wow. Most people think he's going to end up being a guard. Now, if the Jets take him at four, which is a lot of people think they might do that at four if he's there, they could put him at right tackle. They could put him at left tackle and move Becton to right tackle. So they could do some of that. But he's got versatility. I mean, what you really ideally want to do when you take an offensive lineman is you want multiple position flexibility with what the player you take. You don't want to just take a guard or a center or, you know, especially this high up. You want some positional flexibility. Whereas Cross is a left tackle. You're saying he's a legitimate left tackle. You could – obviously play him at right. You could play Cross at left guard. It's the Cooper draft. It's the, you know, where Jonathan Cooper got drafted in the first round. It's where you take these one-dimensional guards that if they don't play well at guard, you're out of luck. And I think that's really the issue.
So the betting market, DraftKings Sportsbook, minus 300, Trayvon Walker to go number one. Hutchinson now the favorite, minus 200, to go number two to Detroit. Is that what you're hearing there? Because there's starting to be some rumblings about maybe Kayvon Thibodeau possibly going to Detroit there at number two.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it was because they were at the workout. You know, Chris Spielman's going to have a lot to say there. You know, he's involved. He's a, you know, he's presented, he's a an advisor, but yet he's, you know, his opinion's going to matter. And Campbell was out to the workout. Campbell didn't go to very many workouts. If you're going to the workout, you're pretty interested in the player. So for me, I think they, look, this whole notion, this narrative, Femi, about, well, we're going to take Hutchinson if he's there because he's from – I mean, does it really matter? Like, seriously.
Is he good is the real question.
How many people from Michigan are going to go to the Lions game just because there's a Michigan player playing there? Like, seriously, how naive is that? How stupid is that logic? It comes back to who's the best player?
Yeah.
Is he better – is Thibodeau better than Hutchinson? Well, we never thought Hutchinson would be there. Well, you had to think that. I mean, you're the second pick overall in the draft. There had to be – you know, you had to play every scenario, right? Mm-hmm. So – I mean, to me, if they think Thibodeau is good enough, they should just take him and don't worry about the PR.
Because there was a report that came out that said that Dan Campbell, the head coach, didn't really like Kayvon Thibodeau. But Kayvon Thibodeau told people, he said that he's got me on speed dial. Like, I love my relationship with Dan Campbell.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
so things are being refuted now that we're getting closer to the draft.
Well, here's the one thing we will predict that's going to be whoever the Lions pick, he was their guy all along.
Yeah.
Okay.
Top of the board.
This is the guy we always wanted. All the other stuff was bullshit. This is the guy we wanted. This is the guy we want. This is what we're going to get from everybody. This is the guy we wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think to me, look, if you like the guy, it doesn't matter where they go. It matters how they play. Mm-hmm. And let me say this to you. Tomorrow, when this thing starts, if anybody starts bitching about a guy going too early, they're not paying attention to this draft. This draft could be upside down. It doesn't matter. I mean, they could be players going way before you think they are because there's so many players of equal value. So this whole notion is, well, they didn't go, you know, they took this guy too early. No, they didn't take him too early.
Reach word.
Yeah, like that. This draft is all reach.
Yeah. Is there anything that would surprise you in those first two picks there? Like, because it sounds like you think that it's going to be Walker. And that's what you've said. That you've been hearing that over the course of a couple weeks here, that it's going to be Trayvon Walker to Jacksonville. Either Hutchinson or Thibodeau at two to Detroit. Is there any other scenario that could possibly surprise you with those first two
picks?
I mean,
if Detroit took Sauce Gardner at two, at corner.
That would be a little surprising.
That would surprise. If the Jets took a corner. Yeah. You know, if they took a corner, that would surprise. I mean, to me, if you take a corner in the top five, he better stack up to the great corner. I mean, Rob Woodson was the ninth pick overall in the draft, okay? Like, that wasn't – like, he wasn't – and he's one of the greatest corners of all time. Plus, he played safety. You know, Deion went fifth. Like seriously, you better make goddamn sure that guy is not a good corner, a shutdown corner. Yeah. Like, he can go over Jalen Ramsey. He went five. You put him on anybody, he'll cover anybody, right? Yeah. So, like, you got to make, to me, that's what the part we miss. We just say this guy, you know, they need a corner. You take somebody the fifth pick in the draft, you better make damn sure he's in the top five at his position or has traits to be in the top five.
You think Sauce Gardner is that guy, or maybe
he's got great size. He's got great size. He can play press. They played it at Cincinnati. He's got long arms. He can run. He's tough. I mean, he's got all the criteria you're looking for in a corner, you know, and you got to see, and he deflects the pass. I mean, he deflects the ball, which is critical, right? You got to be able. One thing about evaluating corners, you want to make damn sure you see them get their hands on the ball. It's like evaluating a basketball player on defense. If he doesn't have any tips, or if he doesn't have any ways where he's never in position to get his hands on the ball. You know, it's like we always say this all the time. Baseball center fielders, the guy that wins the Golden Glove usually gets his hands on a lot of balls, right? Now, he might make more errors than you think, but because he's getting to balls that nobody else gets to. So guys that are great get to their hands on more footballs than anybody. It's just part of being great. You're just around the ball more.
Yeah, it's interesting because Sauce Gardner, Derek Stingley are the corners that we're hearing who could potentially go high. Maybe two of them in the first six picks. Maybe one of them in the first three picks there. Do you have a preference? Because Stingley, his freshman year, I thought, it's like, this kid's like 19 years old. He's going to be a top five pick eventually the way he played.
They weren't even, and when he was playing, they weren't even throwing the ball. I mean, they weren't even throwing the ball over there. I mean, he has the potential to be a number one corner, outside corner in the league. There's no, if you just watch his freshman tape, it's there.
It's terrific.
Terrific, right? But he's not played well. Now, what's the reasons? And if you can kind of quantify the reasons, then you've got a better chance. I mean, you know, to me, he's got huge upside. That's why if he went third to Houston, like some people are suspecting he might do, like nothing's going to surprise me tomorrow night. Like, there's nothing. I mean, a quarterback going in the top 10 wouldn't surprise me. I wouldn't agree with it, but it wouldn't surprise me.
You'd see where the team would get to that point.
I mean, they just talked themselves into it. Yeah. They're just going to blow the pick, but that's okay. I mean, we understand that. But to me, like, then obviously you feel comfortable that whatever's bothering you, you've been able to work it through.
Well, let's talk about Houston at three, because I think that's the team that nobody really knows how they're going to approach this, because last year was Nick Caserio's first year at GM there. They didn't have a pick in the first two rounds, so we don't really have any history to go off of. He comes from New England, so we can, I guess, assume that he might have similar tastes as that New England front office there, but is Caserio, would he go corner that high there, or maybe O-line?
I mean, if he thought Stingley was the best, if he thought Stingley was a shutdown corner, he would. You know, if he felt like Sauce was, I think you could justify taking a corner. You just got to make sure they're that guy. And then you also got to make sure you're playing a lot of man. Lovey wants to play Tampa too. I mean, go back and watch your tape this year. They play a lot of Tampa too. They play. Now, you got to play some man-to-man. There's no denying that. So there's a place to do that. But I think ultimately, you know, I think whoever the pressure on Nick in this draft is, he is now finally, he got A's for the trade. He got all these draft picks. So now he got an A, but the A really is like that midterm you took. You really don't get the A until the final semester. Like, the picks have to get turned in.
I like the analogy.
Right? The picks got to get turned in. It's like, okay, when John Shaw traded Eric Dickerson to the Indianapolis Colts, you know, John Shaw got an A. Got an A in the draft, right? Go back. Was Cleveland Gary worth it? Was Bill Hawkins worth it? Was Darrell Henley? All those players that you tallied up that ended up paying out, was it worth it? That's Nick's challenge now. Nick's not on the hot seat, but the challenge, he's got to make these picks count.
Convert them.
Because that's what's measured. It's not you got three ones. Those picks turn into players, and you got to make sure those players are good. That's the key. That's what there's so much. So if I'm him, I don't give a shit about any position. I'm picking the best player that I know I'm going to probably want to sign an extension to in the fifth year.
Those picks having to convert almost reminds me of the Rams trade with the now Commanders when RG3, when you saw Washington go up to two, and everyone's like, the Rams got all these picks, and it came nothing.
Nothing to it. It's like all these. It's like it's go through any of this. I mean, you know, go through any of it. You know, when the Minnesota Vikings traded Fran Tarkenton, you know, for all the Giants picks, they ended up getting Alan Page. Okay, that's worth it now. We got Alan Page. We got a Hall of Fame. But most times, nobody goes back and revisits it for what it is, you know, like, and what is the actual trade now? Because those picks become players.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the draft to come. We're going to take a quick break here, but we're going to talk about these quarterbacks because there's some stuff we got to get to, especially with the Carolina Panthers. But first, let's take a quick break. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, Michael, we got to talk about what we heard from Panthers owner David Tepper earlier on Wednesday, because he said Darnold is a very good quarterback and that Rome wasn't built in a day. We're going to practice patience and all these things. And it's interesting because everybody has assumed that Tepper would be the one who's the aggressor and wants to go up and get maybe his former alums quarterback there in Kenny Pickett from Pitt. Like, it's Tepper now talking about this almost feels like this Panthers thing is not going to be at quarterback. Like, we're not going to quarterback here in the top 10 at pick six.
You know, Tepper's worth, what, $50 billion, $60 billion? I mean, I don't think he could buy.
I can't count that high.
He can't buy Twitter, but he's but he's really rich, right? So, like, when you get that rich, Fem, the one thing you know is value. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, one thing I know about rich people, they don't mind spending for quality, but they're not going to spend for mediocrity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's just a human, that's just the trait they've had 100%. To accumulate all this wealth, right? Well, he didn't get stupid overnight. Like, he knows that if he turns in a card for a quarterback at six, that's not worth it. He's not getting his value. That goes against every business belief he has. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, football's different than business. No, it's not. Bill Walsh said that back in 84. It's the same business. You got to run it the same way, right? And so there's no value. So for what he's saying simply is, look, we gave up. We didn't pay a lot for Sam. We gave a 2 and a 3. He was not very good last year. We hired a new coach. Maybe we can fix him. But for me to turn in and pay 90 cents for 10 cents, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, why would I pay a dollar for something that's worth 20 cents? Like, that's not his life. He's never done that before. Yeah. So why would you expect him to behave like that? And people say, well, he wants a quarterback. Yeah, I'm sure he wants one. But he could have made the same deal that the Browns made. People don't realize this. That deal the Browns made was what got the Browns in the Watson deal.
The guarantee.
The full buttoned up, kiss your mm-hmm. sister guarantee, comb your hair, okay? That was the full buttoned up deal. Everybody had their chance. Everybody said no. Cleveland got back in because they said yes, right? Nobody was willing to do that except Cleveland, which got him the guy. Okay, fine. They did it. That's how they got out and got in.
Yeah.
So for as much as Tepper wants the quarterback, he knows value. There's no – if you listen to anybody, there's no value. Like, even the people that like Willis, they can't tell you the value is there now. It's going to be down the road. Mm-hmm. They can't tell you that. And so if you reverse engineer it, like you should do on every good decision, you should like you bring your car to a mechanic, he's got to learn to put the engine together before he can fix your engine. So you got to figure out like what works in the NFL, what does it. And there's great margin of error for Malik Willis. There is.
Yeah.
Funny release, you know, not tall. There's a lot of things. It's not a slam dunk. Like I said this today on the show, Lamar Jackson's the 32nd pick in the draft. He won a Heisman. Right, he won a ton of games at Louisville. He's better than any one of these quarterbacks. It's not even close.
Yeah.
Go back and read what people were saying about him.
Wasn't pretty.
Wasn't pretty. And then we made him sit in the green room for how long?
All the way till 32.
He's the MVP. And now you're telling me these guys should go before he goes because the man is high? Come on, please stop.
Yeah. And I think the point with Tepper, too, with Carolina is that he tried to go for other quarterbacks, and that's what people are trying to make this connection of, oh, he's so quarterback hungry and all this, because he tried to get Matthew Stafford, couldn't do it. He tried to get Deshaun Watson, didn't want to do the guarantees and all that. But it's like, these guys are not those guys.
Right.
Like, these guys are not guys that can win you a Super Bowl, potentially, at least from our vantage point. At least it doesn't seem like they are that. Maybe one of these guys surprises us later on, 5-6 years down the line. But at least right now, none of these guys are perceived that way.
If you take over any organization, you buy a franchise, your number one goal is to get your quarterback.
Yeah.
So you're going to be relentless in that pursuit. And until you get that guy and that you know, I mean, Cleveland, remember when Baker started after Tyrod Taylor went up? Yeah. They thought they had their guy. I kept saying that he can't throw it from the pocket, he can't see, but no, I was completely wrong, right? No, they got their guy. No, they don't have their guy.
Yeah, look at him
now. Even when you think you have your guy, you don't know whether you have. How about Jared Goff? I mean, I could show you Twitter, people ripping my ass on Twitter, retweeting something I said on Rich Eisen's show about I didn't think Goff was going to be the guy. Oh, I must have got – I got destroyed. Destroyed. They didn't have their guy either. Yeah. So even when you think you have your guy, you're still looking for a guy. The pursuit of a quarterback never ends. It's like when people think that Bill Walsh, that there's a tale that goes around that's completely wrong, that Bill Walsh was going to go work out James Owens at UCLA. Mm-hmm. The 49ers didn't have a first-round pick in that draft the year he came to the 49ers. They had traded it for O.J. Simpson. So they didn't have it. They had a second-round pick. He was down at UCLA, and the narrative is that he needed somebody to work out. Leonard Armato was Montana's agent, and he said, why don't you let him throw for you? Okay, so he threw for him and Bill fell in love that day. That's not true. Like, Bill had watched the player, he knew the player, and then when he worked out the player, he realized he was a better quarterback than the one he had at Stanford, Steve Fuller, I'm not sure. But anyway, he was better than that guy. And then he redshirted him his first year. But he was going to continue to look for a guy until Montana proved he could be the guy. That's what you do. That's what Tepper's doing, is what everybody should do. It's what Seattle did when you were up there. They had, they trade for Charlie Whitehurst. Yep. They signed Matt Flynn. They draft Russell Wilson. Did they think that if they would have thought that any one of those two before were perfect, would they have drafted Russell? Of course not. That's what
and it saved their ass. Like,
what gets teams in trouble is when they say, we're good. We're good. When you're not good.
That's interesting, because these quarterbacks, I get what you're saying with, like, you want to always keep looking for them. And is that why we're going to see these guys go in the first round? Because it's almost like teams are almost taking lottery shots of, okay, maybe this Willis kid can be good. Maybe the Pickett can be good. Maybe Corral can be good.
But see, like, if I were Cleveland last year, you were in striking distance to get – now, maybe they didn't like Mac Jones, okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't like Justin Fields. I don't know this. But you knew you weren't paying Baker Mayfield $40 million.
Yeah, they made up their minds, yeah.
You knew you weren't going to pay him. So you better have drafted a quarterback. Now, they got – so what happened? How did they get out of it? Well, they had money. They compounded the problem. Say they drafted Fields last year. Baker would have been furious, right? He would have been all upset. He would have been crying. We'd have to give him a hanky, and all that. But they wouldn't have given up all these picks for – even when you get one, like, then you have to ask yourself the question. Say you draft Malik Willis. Are you paying him $50 million a year in 5 years from now?
Well, you better see a lot in those first 3 years.
The chances are you're probably not, right? So, okay, so now I'm going to be looking for another guy in 3 or 4 years anyway, right? Yeah. Like, how does this it's you can't just – there's it's sustainable and solution-based. With everybody that runs mock drafts, they do it because it solves a problem. It's solution-based. If you're building an NFL team, you want to be sustainable-based. So you got to be able to pick the guy that sustains the franchise. Josh Allen can sustain the franchise. I thought Josh Allen was inaccurate. I didn't think he would be as nearly as good as he was. He's right. Lamar Jackson, I thought would be a good pro. Whether he's going to turn in the round in the passing game, we shall see. But he can sustain a franchise. Mm-hmm. Whether he can win a playoff game, that remains to be seen. And I think that's ultimately what you have to. You can't stop your search. You can't. You just, you can't, because the game is too hard.
Now that we've built these quarterbacks up, one might say, or tore them down, how many do you think we end up see go on Thursday? Because we've seen their draft props, they're starting to creep up.
Was it 2.5 now?
It was 2.5, but even like positionally for a guy like a Malik Willis, his over-under starts at 10.5. Now it's like 14.5. Pickett,
well, because
10.5, now it is 16, 17.5.
Like, I think people have seen it.
People
are
catching on.
I think what's happened is, and I've said this before, I think people are actually talking to teams in the league. I mean, I was on the phone today with a team that needs a quarterback, and they don't have any first-round grades on any of these quarterbacks. I mean, and they need one. And they probably wouldn't pick him if they had if they were there in the second. Like, there's going to be other players. So I don't know. I mean, I think this is I my sense of it is I think there probably would be two. But again, when you get back to the bottom of the first, okay, so you're sitting there and you're Atlanta and you got a chance to get from, you know, Kansas City has 29 and 30. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you're at the top of the second or near, would Kansas City trade you so you could get? Because here's the other thing you got to have. You take Willis and you go and you draft him in the second. You better know in three. He's not playing next year. I'm just going to give you that clue. Next year, when you're sitting here at Circa Watch, you're not going to watch Willis. He ain't going to be any of those big screens. Right. There's no chance he's going to be on the big. Neither is Matt Corral. He ain't going to be on any of those big screens. You know, maybe Pickett might. Even if, say, Pittsburgh picks one, Trubisky's going to start.
Yeah.
So, but if you get the fifth year, but if you take him in the second, you only got 3 years to make up your mind. That's a tough situation.
Yeah, it's just I'm curious to see, because I think one of these teams, in my opinion, is going to get desperate and take that fifth year option and be like, okay, maybe, or let's say Pittsburgh takes Malik Willis 20. A team could get trigger happy of like, oh man, we might lose out on Pickett if we don't take him here now. Like, let's get back into the first round and try to trade for him to get that fifth year option and get our quote unquote.
It'll be interesting to see what Detroit does at 32.
Yeah.
If they decide that, because if they want to move on from Goff, then they probably have done all their homework and due diligence on all the quarterbacks in the draft. And they know there's going to be one of them that makes it to them, whether it's Corral, whether it's Sam Howell, whether it's, you know, maybe Malik Willis, maybe he makes it to him.
Mm-hmm.
You better do all your work. Maybe Pickett makes it to him. I'm not sure. But would they turn that pick in? See, the problem is, if you want to get rid of your guy, the reason you don't get rid of your guy is because you don't have a guy to replace him.
Yeah, we have a question actually from Twitter. Jeremy on Twitter says, do you think that this is the type of year, let's say Detroit, they have picks 32 and 34, would they package that to move up for a Ritter or a Pickett or a Willis if they were to get outside the top 20?
I don't think they need to move up.
You feel those guys will just fall to them right there?
I mean, they could turn this. I mean, Ritter could be 32. Now, some people think Tennessee could take Ritter down at the bottom of the first. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, look, one thing we know for sure, when you get down to the bottom, when you get to Green Bay's pick at 20, let's say Pittsburgh at 20, that's going to be a quarterback alert, right? New England's not picking a quarterback. Green Bay's not picking a quarterback. Arizona ain't picking one. Dallas isn't. Buffalo isn't. Tennessee might. There's 26, yep. Right? Tampa's not. Green Bay not again. Kansas City certainly not. Cincinnati's not. See, so when you're in the draft room and you want to move into the round, what you're doing is targeting teams to get ahead of the team that you know might pick a quarterback. So if you think Detroit might do it, Mike Brown won't trade 31 to you because he doesn't trade very much. So you're trying to call Kansas City. You're trying to think about that's how you're trying to play that game. But that's the only way I see them going in the bottom of the first, if somebody tries to do that, just to get ahead of. But then if they get to the second, I think you'll see some teams trying to make a move to get up there.
The team that picks right before Tennessee is Buffalo at 25. And I want to ask you about that when we come back, because a team might want to move up to that spot for the Buffalo Bills to maybe secure their guy before Tennessee pulls the trigger.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, Michael, we spent a lot of time talking about the top of the draft, but let's look at the back half of the draft, because there were some really intriguing teams, teams that have multiple first-round picks that could be active here. What do you make of, let's say, a Green Bay or a Kansas City that has multiple picks, also wide receiver needy? What could those teams possibly do here on Thursday?
I mean, I think if they're really smart, they have the ability to maneuver if they can, right? They can get extra picks if they want them, and they can also get a player that they want. You know, Green Bay would do that. I mean, Green Bay certainly could pick a guy that they really like. I think a lot of it, when you're at the back of the draft, it really is about what comes to you. Like, there'll be an unexpected player that makes it to you that you probably said, okay, let's take this guy. You know, we should take him and see. And it may not be the position you want to take. In this draft, I think if you have multiple picks, you got to throw out your team need board and just take the best player, because it's so hard to fit good player with need in a draft that is kind of doesn't have a lot of great players in it. So I think that's what I would do if I were them. I would make sure. And look, the receiver board, everybody's going to, what, they have six receivers. Well, I don't know what the number is on receivers.
I think we're up to seven now.
Step to seven. Why not have 10? We should just take 10, you know? I mean, so, you know, I think that the thing is, you're not going to replace Tyreek Hill's a number one. Mm. I've said this so many times. It's very hard to find a number one. Like, Deebo Samuel's a one receiver, but he's a one in a different way than a true number one is. He's not going to line up outside the numbers and win. He's a get the ball in my hands, I'll break tackles, I'll make big plays, I can run with the ball. That's a different kind of receiver than when you've got an outside guy that can win like that. So I think that's kind of the way I see it. I think that's the bottom of the draft. You really can't predict the bottom of the draft. You have to have your horizontal board really aligned perfectly.
Because that's the interesting part, because we always hear teams say, on any given draft, the average amount of first-round picks in a given draft is about 18, maybe 20 in a good draft. In a year like this, where there can only be maybe 14 guys who have true first-round grades, do you think one of these teams that has multiple picks can just say, okay, we're hanging back here, we have these two picks, but we're not going to get a first-round caliber player, let's move up and then go into the top 12, top 15?
But now you're paying a premium for mediocrity. You're moving up to get, if you thought the guy was a legitimate player, but you're going to give up a really good pick to move up to get a guy that maybe you could get later.
It could be like a double.
It could be, you know, and so now you're overpaying. You're paying correctly by the chart, but you're overpaying by the value. See, the one thing the chart doesn't really do, the chart tells you the value of the trade. The chart doesn't account for the player in the trade.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? That's the missing link of the chart. Like, I'm trading up. If you're trading up to get Dan Marino in the first round, that's worth
Congratulations.
It. Congratulations, right? If you're trading up to get Tony Eason in the first round, not so good, right? Like, we say they did the chart, but you got to be right on the player when you trade up. If you trade up to get a guy, it's not that. Why do people trade back? People trade back because it's been proven that through a bunch of research, Penn, Cade, the draft guy, that there's a 52% chance when you have A and B, if you took B, you might be just as good as taking A. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times have you seen drafts? I can remember when I was a kid, the Eagles wanted Perry Tuttle in the first round, and he got picked right in front of him. Dick Vermeil almost had a heart attack. They turned the card in for Mike Quick. They got a better player.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times, sometimes you get the better player when you don't worry about it. And people are more inclined in this draft to go to clusters. Get me in a cluster of players.
It's interesting, though, because trading down in this draft might not be as easy because, like you mentioned,
nobody
wants to do it. So if you're the one team, like let's say if you're a Kansas City or you're a New Orleans or a Green Bay, if you're that one team that actually wants to trade up, could you be able to get it on the cheap? Because a team like Carolina might be looking to just bail at six, or Seattle might be looking to bail at six, because we know those two GMs have a propensity to try to trade down. Like, might it end up being a little cheaper than normal drafts where it's kind of a punitive price to move up?
You know, in 86, this is a long time ago, in 86, we were going to pick one of three players, and they went in perfect order. And we made a trade with Dallas, and Dallas traded up two spots. So we bought a half hour to kind of reconfigure our plan. And then when we got that half hour, we still didn't know what to do. And Buffalo was going to come up. They wanted to pick. They were going to pick Will Wolford, who ended up being a career left tackle for them, a really good player. and they were holding firm, and we were trying to get him to, this is a 12-round draft, we were trying to get him to throw a ninth-round pick in there. And finally, Walsh just says, look, this is a better move for us. We don't need the ninth. Let's just make the deal. And he told McVay, who was the general manager, just if they'll close it for this, close it. It was more important to make the deal than it was to win the deal. Mm-hmm. You follow me? That hasn't been the mentality here. This is the kind of draft where if you're Matt Rhule at 6 and you really want to go to 10 because you don't want to pick, say there's not a tackle there, say there's not a left tackle.
They get
there.
Wiped out at tackle.
Say you get wiped out and you want to go, and 10 wants to come up or 11 wants to come up, and they're offering you slightly less than the chart. Unless you feel strongly about the guy you're going to turn in, you should probably take slightly less than the chart. This is what I think we might see this week. You might take less for the chart because you just say, you know what, I'd rather not win the deal. I'd rather go down and win the day as opposed to the deal. I think that could play into it. Again, when you trade down, you got to know what you're going to get when you go down there. You got to say, you don't know who, but you're going to say, I got one of these five players.
Yeah. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys did that in 2013. I believe it was. They were sitting at 18, and they were on the clock. They're like, oh, we don't really like anybody. And they took less from San Francisco, who moved up and got Eric Reed. They ended up taking Travis Frederick, who ended up being a pretty good center for them. So
yeah, they didn't want – they were going to take – if they would have gotten stuck, they would take a Frederick right
at
there.
At 18,
And they would have gotten ripped and said, you can't take a center
They got
right?
ripped at 31.
Of course they did.
Ended up being a pretty good player there. That's the fascinating thing to me about these trades is because – you want to get the value, but then you also might not like the player there at, let's say, pick 8 or at 11 or so. So with that being in mind, do you think we're going to end up seeing quite a bit of trades with all these teams having more? I mean, it's 8 teams have 2 first-round picks. You know, is it going to be a trader's market here?
I think there'll be trades, like there always is, but it always used to crack me up when somebody would say, you know, I like that player at 15. I don't like him at 11. Like, really? Are you serious?
That tells me you don't like the player.
What is that? That's exactly. You're just what you're trying to do is not put your name on the player.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to do, which is a lot of people do that. I don't, you know, so for me, I like, you know, I think to me, if you want to move down, if you're a team like I read this morning, the Giants, or they're getting phone calls on 7. Mm-hmm. They're not getting any calls on 7. Nobody knows, you know. They might get some on draft day. They're trying to stir up some interest.
I was going
to
say, did the Giants sell them
that? That's an advertisement. That's a billboard on the turnpike, you know? And so they're trying to get some advertisement. But the reality of it is you might have to take less. You might lose the deal.
Yeah.
Again, the trade downs are linked to the players. It's the value of the player.
Do these trades ever get worked out in advance? So, like, let's say today right now when teams are playing the mock draft scenario, saying, okay, if this – 8 picks go this way, here's what we might do at 9. Do you think that these teams are actually making calls the day before and are saying, hey, if this player is available, are you interested? We can make a deal.
Look, say you're at 12, the Minnesota's at 12, and New Orleans is, or the Chargers are at 17. You call up and you call up your friend at Minnesota who's ever in charge of making deals, and you say, hey, would you guys thinking about moving? We might move depending on if our guy's there or not. Okay, great. So you know. But you know going into it, teams that'll move and teams that won't move. And even when you think you got a deal with a team that you're going to be able to move with, they bail on you at the last second because, well, we want to turn the guard in and pick the guy. I mean, it's the great story of Joe Montana. I mean, when Bill Tobin left his house in Chicago the morning of the draft in 1979, his family, his wife Duke, his son, were kids. And they love Joe Montana. They're Chicago, Notre Dame, all that. Yeah. He said, "Hey, look, if Montana makes it us in the third round, we'll take him. Don't worry, he'll be a Bear." Well, what happens is, when the third round comes, I think Willie McClendon, the running back from Georgia, ends up being there in the third. And instead of taking Montana, they take the back, even though the plan was to take the back, right? And they take the back, and Montana goes to the 49ers. Okay. Wow. Nobody knows this story, right? So the reality of it is that is sometimes what happens when you're trying to make a trade. You think you have it worked out, but then something that you would never have anticipated happens.
Yeah, life happens.
and then all of a sudden you're out. And all of a sudden Joe Montana could have been a Bear.
Wow.
He was one step away from being a Bear. They turned in the running back, even though Tobin told his family, if he's there in the 30s, ours. That's the morning of the draft.
And that rewrites the course of NFL history.
Right that rewrites the course right of no. That's how close it is.
That's,
I mean,
that's crazy.
You know, that's what happens on these trades. So what you do is you plan to call these teams, and you have it all worked out. But at the end of the day, nothing's final until the clock. So Washington's on the clock, and you're the charge at 17. You call up Martin Mayhew or Marty Horney and say, hey, you guys ready to move? Yeah, what are you going to give it for us? Well, the chart says this. Here's what it's going to cost to go from 17-11. We'll do that deal. We'll get back to you. They hang up because they got 12 minutes. So now you're waiting. So what you do at 17, you don't sit there and wait for them to call you back. You're not the mate. Then you call 13. Then you call 12. You call right Minnesota. Hey, we'll do this if our guys are. Would you do this trade if our guys are? Minnesota, well, you know, now they know who they might get. Mm-hmm. Call us back when we're on the clock. We might do that. Okay, boom. Then you called Houston. See, then you're doing that. Then maybe maybe Washington calls you back and says, you know, if you sweeten this, we'll do it. Now you got to make a call.
Yep.
Now you're paying above the board. They don't really want to do it, but if you're dumb enough to sweeten it, will you do it?
If you're really
now
that you gotta desperate make to call. Get to 11.
Now one guy's got to make that call. And the one guy, you know, because all the scouts are sitting over there in the corner. Like, one guy's got to make, okay, no, I don't want to do that. You know, so you got to kind of play that game. So you got five or so. You're basically a short order cook. You got a bunch of shit on the stove,
I was gonna say.
And you got the tags coming in. You know, and you got to put the food's got to go out hot. So now you got to say, okay, turn them down. Let's go to Minnesota.
Wow.
And then when you turn them down, they might call you back and say, we'll do your original deal. It's all poker, right? It's all poker. So you're all just playing poker. And when you're in love with a player, like when I was calling teams to make trades for the Raiders, they knew if I was calling, Al wanted them. Mm-hmm. So I was a one-arm paper hanger. I was going in there. I was getting my ass kicked because I didn't have any ability to say, well, because I wasn't going to go tell him we couldn't get it done, right? I wasn't going to go out there and tell him. No,
avoid the headache.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out. You want a third? What else you want in here? I'll throw it in here for you, you know?
I'm just saying, what's that conversation like if you say, hey, Al, we can't get him?
Could you imagine if I would have gone back and said to him, hey, you know, Mr. Davis, I turned the deal down. They wanted me to throw in a 6-round pick. I wouldn't do it. I'd have been fired. He'd have hung me like Mussolini in the squad. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? That's a shot. No, fuck. See what I'm saying? Yeah. So you got to constantly, you're playing poker with them. But if you're a good, like Belichick's a great poker player, never raises his voice. Hey, look, here's what we'll do. No, I don't want to do that. Click phone, hang up. You know, he's making all the calls. Like, there's nobody. That's why when we go to these rooms with all these people in them, I don't know how anybody does anything because you got to focus and concentrate. You know, you got too many people in your ear, you're going to lose your mind. So, like, okay, if you want me to throw in a 6, I mean, you know, think about it. You know, that's why it's usually the guy on the phone is relaying the information so the guy can hear it and think who's making the decision. This is where it gets into problems because some of the guys making the decision don't know enough about football, right? And so now the coach is in that guy's ear, you know, like, we should do it. We should do it. Well, it may not be a right thing to do.
Yeah, because the coach is trying to save his butt too. You know, he's trying to get an extension and all that.
Exactly.
It's competing kind of interest, I should say. Yep. Real quick, because you talked about the Montana story. I thought it was a fantastic story with the Bears. If we're on the clock, who are the guys that you would absolutely not trade away from? I know you love Jordan Davis, the tackle out of Georgia. Who else do you like that in this draft where you're like, I would not trade away from that guy. I'm going to stick and pick. You can call me with the moon, the sun, the stars. I'm rejecting it. I'm going to make this pick.
I would probably say the offensive lineman, I wouldn't trade away from Cross because I think he's got great upside. I wouldn't trade away from the North Carolina State kid.
Akanu.
I can never say his name correctly. But he's a guard. I think he's going to end up being a guard. I probably wouldn't do that. You know, if I felt like, you know, but other than that, I think I would be open game for everybody. I mean, I think this is a draft not to be a lover. I think the people that have good drafts tomorrow and Thursday and Friday will be the teams that don't love a player. But to me, I don't understand it. I keep saying it. I don't know how Jordan Davis is in a top 5 pick. Like, I don't understand. There's no people on this planet, that are 6'6", 345, that run 4'8". It isn't like he just disappeared. Like, when Chester McLaughlin came out, the great Chester McLaughlin, Chester was a great player. But Chester walked off the field in the Gator Bowl, or not the Gator Bowl, it was a Citrus Bowl. It was one of those in Tampa. I get the citrus, one of those.
Outback Bowl, maybe.
Right. You know, they had five different names. He literally walked off the field. He was a hard guy to coach. And they told you that. They told you that at Clemson. They told you, hey, he's hard to coach. He's not going to be easy for you. But you knew what you were getting into. Whereas this kid's, I mean, 4.85?
You almost have to watch the video twice to be like, is this real?
The guy has quickness. Yeah. He's not like a lumbering four. He's not a lumbering. Like, what human being on planet Earth does what he does? Like, nobody. And you get the one thing about being a defensive line coach in the National Football League is you've got to almost be a lion tamer. You need a top hat, a cane, and a whip because those guys are just wired differently, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're too nice to them, and they're gonna play nice. Like you got to be like a boxing trainer. You got to go in there and really work them. You got to be like you got to really get after them, and you got to have a kind of a mindset. You get somebody who can crawl up his ass and really get him to get what you got to get out of him. Ndamukong Suh went the first pick in the draft. Like, tell me, like, why is he better than?
And Jordan Davis, yeah, it's
and he played and Jordan Davis played on a defense that dominated.
Yeah, Sue was amazing at Nebraska, but this Davis kid, he was my favorite player the entire college football season. I absolutely loved him.
You loved him because he made plays. I could see if people are saying Lombardi, he doesn't make any plays.
Oh no,
he makes plays.
He's disruptive. Like,
well, he can't rush on third down. Well, okay, I'll show you what he could do on third down. He's going to line up over your little shitty center,
yep.
Who you know, and I'm going to tell him to push that center back as fast as he can.
Yep, right into your quarterback's lap. And we know that every single quarterback says, I don't mind the pressure on the edges. I absolutely hate it right
when
up in my face.
When somebody's in my face, I hate it. Like, I don't understand it. To me, I just think it's just I'm missing something.
We're overthinking it. But, hey, let's take a quick break on the other side. I want to give you some fun first player to be drafted head-to-heads that I think we can have some fun with here. Don't go away. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, Michael, before we get out of here, I wanted to give you some rapid-fire questions here. And these are odds courtesy from DraftKings. They have a first player to be drafted prop, and there's some head-to-heads.
Okay.
And I wrote down about five of them that I thought could be really interesting and spark some good discussion. The first one, NC State offensive tackle Akeem Okwunu versus Kayvon Thibodeau, the Oregon pass rusher. Okwunu -125, Thibodeau -105. Who goes first in the draft?
Oh, that's a tough one here. I mean, I know... You know, I mean, I have Okwunu on my board rated slightly higher than Thibodeau. I have Thibodeau in the 1B category. I have Okwunu in the 1A. But I would say Okwunu, but I think Detroit's the wild card there because I think he could go there. I mean, that's a tough one. That's a really good that DraftKings is smart. I mean, they know how to get that.
Yeah, DraftKings, the betting market. It's funny how these things always get to efficient numbers. The next,
I mean, on paper, it's but. But based on what I try to do is judge this through what you'd hear, and I would suspect I would go Okwunu, but I think that could be wrong based on Detroit.
Yeah, Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, we don't know what they're up to, but they could be up to something. The next one, LSU cornerback Derek Stingley -165 versus FSU pass rusher Jermaine Johnson +125. Who goes first?
I think it's going to be – well, Johnson's rumored to go to the Jets. I mean, I think that Johnson could go to the Jets. I think he's pretty highly thought. He's the next guy that goes, you know. And I don't think – you know, if Carolina – does Carolina take a pass rusher like Johnson? I think I might lean Stingley here.
Yeah, Stingley, to me, it sounds like Houston likes him. But you mentioned the Jets with Johnson. That thing is gaining some serious steam over the last few days here. Yeah. They might take him as high as 4. And, like, this is a guy who's thought of – in the 8
I think if Okwunu's at 4, I think they'll take him.
You think Jets go with Okwunu?
Yeah, I think the Jets will take him at 4 if he makes it to
get a big offensive line if they draft
him. Yeah, if they can get him going. I mean, they got some, you know, they still right tackle. I mean, if they played him at right tackle, you know, but if they keep, what do they have, Fane in there at right tackle, they could move in, you know, in the guard.
Mm-hmm. Mekhi Becton, if they ever get that situated.
I mean Mekhi Becton could be really good if he can get his – I mean, Mekhi Becton, when they want to run – when you watch Jet tape, when he's good, when he's playing – they run the ball left. They get 4 yards every time they run the ball.
He's a massive human being.
Much like Jordan Davis. Those are rare guys to come around.
The next few are pass catchers. Garrett Wilson, the Ohio State wide receiver, -140 versus Jameson Williams, the Alabama wide receiver, +110.
I think I'm going to take Garrett Wilson.
You're going to go Wilson there.
Yeah, because I think that he's the number one. See, the problem with Jameson is obviously the medical. We don't know if he's going to be healthy enough. I think that's going to be the issue.
I saw something interesting, though. Jameson Williams told a Philadelphia beat writer or Philadelphia local news anchor that he said the Eagles would take him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know how many more receivers the Eagles can take. I mean,
like two straight years.
Talking about trading Rieger. Like, who's going to give you anything for Rieger right now?
Nobody.
They just moved our Whiteside to tight end. You see that?
Yeah, Arcego Whiteside?
They moved him to tight end. How's that going to go? Can I tell you how that – you know when you move to tight end, that's like your first step to moving out the door.
Arcego Whiteside, he couldn't run away from a fire hydrant. Jameson Williams, let's stay on his topic. He's minus 140 versus Drake London, the USC pass catcher, who's plus 110.
I'll take Jameson Williams there.
Take Williams?
Yeah.
I've heard some things about Atlanta liking London quite a bit. He was that big, strong guy for Arthur Smith's offense.
Look, if they took him at 8 or 9, I am not going to question anybody's judgment on the draft in terms of taking a guy too early.
It's whatever your flavor of ice cream
whatever
is.
Whatever you see it, everybody evaluates differently and every scheme is different. You know, that's the one thing I don't think we talk enough about. Is if you play third base for the Mets and you played in the 1 o'clock game and the Mets and the Yankees are playing at 7 and you got traded to the Yankees, you could drive right over to the game and you could play for the Yankees that day at third base. It wouldn't matter. Baseball's baseball. Football, if you're a right guard for Kyle Shanahan and you get traded to the Las Vegas Raiders to Josh McDaniels, you're going to take a little while to figure out what you got to do. The techniques, the fun, they're all different. And because of that, not all players fit everybody's scheme. Mm-hmm. And that's where the difference is.
Yeah, and that's usually what ends up deciding these draft orders. One team's like, hey, this guy is our scheme guy. This guy's not, so we would never take him. And that's kind of how these things work themselves out. Last one here, it's a wide receiver versus a cornerback. Ohio State's Chris Olave is minus 125 versus Washington's Trent McDuffie, the cornerback, minus 105.
I think I'd take McDuffie here.
Okay, you think McDuffie goes a little bit before Olave?
I think McDuffie's the last – whenever you're the last corner – right. Whenever you're the last corner and then there's a drop to the next guy, you get moved up a little bit. We better get this guy. If we don't get him, there's nobody else. So even if we, you know, it's one of those, you know, I don't like him at 14, but I like him at 17. Well, you know, you got to take him at 14 because he's not going to be there.
Yeah. McDuffie, yeah. I mean, he's being pushed up because Stingley and Sauce Gardner.
Once they're gone, it's, you know, then where are we? The key guy in this draft that nobody seems to have an idea that everybody loves is Hamilton. Where's he going to go?
Yeah, he's fallen a little bit, or quote-unquote
well,
fallen.
I mean, I think he's fallen because, again, you know, Jamal Adams, you know, he got – I don't know why Seattle paid him. I really don't. I don't know why he got drafted so early because he's an in-the-box player, and once people point him out as the Mike or make him the Will and give him to the line and pass protection, he's not effective. Mm-hmm. He's an in-the-box player who runs to the football. Like that's you can't pay top dollar for that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I get the Seahawks; they did it because oh my god, we gave up multiple first round picks, so we have to get something out of this in terms of the years.
Well, it's like okay, all right, let me ask
you this.
Doubling
down, essentially.
This is a question nobody's talking about. I like to have your opinion. Mm-hmm. What are you doing with James Harden when they lose this series? So he didn't pick up his player. They said he was going to pick up the option mm-hmm. for 1 year, but he didn't. So does that mean he's a free agent? Are you paying $200 million, a max contract? How are you getting out of that? That's the fundamental. Everybody wants you to make a trade, but nobody goes to second order thinking. Like, what do we do when we get this guy? Yeah. Like, are we really going to pay Jamal Adams all this money after we gave up two number ones? I get it. They love him. They think he's a good player. He had 11 sacks 2 years. I get all that. Same thing with Harden. Like, if you're Daryl Morey and you just traded all this you really didn't trade all. You traded draft picks, right? Yep. You traded two players who are going to be free agents.
The
guy doesn't want to play basketball anymore, right? So you really didn't trade anything. You did, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. But the question is, you put your team in. You were going to put your team in jail if you give him this extension when he hasn't been worth it. So what do you do? See, you got to ask. That's but the same thing comes down to these quarterbacks. Are we going to give Malik Willis a fifth year? We think he's good enough to play 10 years? Do we think Pickett's good enough? Like, that's you got to shape the question.
Yeah. It's almost like a poker player who's pot committed. you're like, gosh, I put already so many. I got a call just so like we're on the river. Like I got a call, and it's like, man, like
you know you're losing. You know he's got a good hand over there, right? Look, Matt Damon knew when he didn't lick the cookie, he was he was going to win it. And Matt Damon also knew he had a good hand in the last hand. You know, and look how pissed off that Malkovich got at him.
KGB.
The KGB got to love it. Isn't that great?
It all comes back to rounders eventually. But gosh, we've got to talk draft for hours. We're going to get the opportunity to talk it Thursday night. We'll be part of VEASAN's draft night coverage. Look out for that 4 to 7 West Coast time, 7 to 10 over on the East Coast. Also, we'll have a draft recap podcast on Monday.
We'll break down all
256 picks that we saw in the draft. Who won the draft? Who lost the draft? Who reached? Who was able to
No grades.
That,
yeah. We're not giving out any grades. No grades.
But we will evaluate what you
do. But Baltimore will get an A, I promise. But the Ravens will get an A in their draft. I think they pay for those.
They
get those. So.
But that is it for the podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Stephen Bond, our producer, always on the ones and twos. Thank you to DraftKings and VEASAN. And we'll talk to you guys soon.